EFTM. Tech, cars, lifestyle.
This is the EFTM podcast with Trevor Long.
EFTM.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading. Great to have you company on the EFTM podcast once again for another week. Lots of people to get to. This is the Talkback Technology Podcast. If you've got a question about technology, if you hear something during this show that makes you go, rah, because you're angry, you're frustrated, you're interested, you're curious, send me an email. Go to the website, EFTM.com, click Ask Trev. I will get the email next Tuesday. I will call you and we will have a chat. That's how it works. That's how it all works. That's how we do Talkback here on EFTM. After many years, decades, in the media and many of them enjoying Talkback Radio, that's why I do this, because I love talking to real people, real consumers, real punters, real buyers, real shoppers, real people, not just, chatting around the office about something, because there's no one to chat to here. It's just me. The way I get a sense of what everyday people want out there is by talking to you. So get in touch. Let me know what you think about anything you've bought. Give us your own review if you like. I don't mind. And we'll try and help you out along the way. I will update you about the app shortly. I got some great feedback about prizes. I'm still thinking about it, and I've given it pause for thought. There's a lot going on. Hubble review is live on the website. Have a good read of that one. I spent a bit of time on it. The Formula One is this weekend. Is everyone excited? I know I am. I'm going to sit back with the boys on the couch and just take in every single session. Of course, I'll watch all the sessions on Friday. They'll be at school. Oh, actually, Jackson won't be. He doesn't go to school on Fridays. Lucky bugger. Harry will be filthy. I'm really looking forward to the Formula One this weekend. I just feel like it's slightly different track, different little bit of evolution of the cars and things. We could get some great racing. Plus the Formula 2, Formula 3, there's a lot, and supercars down there who are filthy that they've been demoted out of pit lane. There's a lot going on down there. So, yeah, Melbourne Formula 1 Grand Prix this weekend. Don't send me messages telling me there. I don't care. If Stephen Fenwick sends me a single message from the Hubble corporate suite on Sunday, I'll just write back, you've been blocked, because I don't want to know. I said no. I'm staying at home with my family. We are so close to just finishing and cleaning and getting the house done. I'm just not going anywhere. Once it's all done, we'll get back to it. But I'm looking forward to spending the weekend watching the Formula One with the boys this weekend. Anyway, you know how to get in touch, EFTM.com. All right, the show's not about me talking. It's about you and your questions, whether you've got a question about technology, a problem with technology, you want to have a chin wag about something in your tech life, that's being the original name of the show, you can get in touch. Call into the EFTM podcast by going to the website, click on Ask Trev, and we'll get you on the line. G'day, Justin.
G'day, Trev.
How you doing, mate?
Oh, pretty good, I reckon.
What can I do for you, my man?
I'm interested in the Hubble. Mm-hmm. But I'm blind, and I am not sure whether or not it will have talking menus for the blind, like the Apple TV and the Google TV.
Oh, have you got an Apple or a Google at the moment?
I do have an Apple TV. Yeah.
Yeah. I have horrible short sight, but apart from that, obviously, I'm completely fine. So I don't have an experience with the accessibility functions, other than to know that no other company other than Apple has ever demonstrated them to me. So, yeah. you know when Apple's willing to sit you in front of someone from Vision Australia or someone who is vision impaired to talk about their experience, you know they've done it well. So I assume the Apple TV, therefore, is broadly navigatable for you and usable.
Yeah. Yes.
So
yes.
What makes you think the Hubble is something you would want for then?
I just like the feature about the channel, the live channels.
Live channel.
You can just look it up in the program.
Gotcha.
Time.
Gotcha. Yeah. Well, I've got Hubble here in the office, and just excuse my audio. I'm going to turn around while I do this, but I figure it's going to be in the settings, right? So, because obviously I haven't looked. So if I go settings, we got picture and sound, parental, startup and standby, network, connected devices, local channel, viewing preferences, and accessibility. That's a good start. So here are the options. Yeah. Audio description on or off, which says here additional commentary that describes the action in a program if available. Wow.
No, that's good.
So does that, have you, have you heard of, like, have you heard of, watched a movie that has this before?
Yeah, yeah.
So what happens if you're in a movie, so I think about movies that Stephen and I have done that are picture dense and I guess script light. I think Gravity was one, you know, out in space. So what would happen? There would be like a narrator that would describe, you know, the character is floating away from the spacecraft as debris, you know, showers around them, that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what
Wow, that is awesome. That is awesome. So, okay, so that's there. But obviously it's only if available because not every program would have that. Closed captions on or off, so as a default closed captions. Highlight programs. Oh, okay, so highlight programs in the TV guide which have closed captions available, so yes or no kind of thing. And then high contrast to make text easy to read. But unfortunately, mate, that's it. That is the limit of the accessibility. So I guess that goes to the level of visual impairment, does it, Justin? So some people who, you know, the high contrast helps them distinguish, you know, the text versus other things and that kind of thing for people that have got a limited visibility, whereas at your level that's of no use to you without the audio description. But, you know, obviously you would have this on Apple, but obviously then I would wonder – no, see, voice control is no good to you if you can't then work out how to play. Though I would say to you that
if you get multiple.
That's true. So I'm looking. Here's what I'm going to say. I am analysing the remote without my eyes. Okay, so I'm feeling the remote, and I know that there's a recessed button, like a convex or concave, you know, inset button, which is the microphone button. So the most obvious button on the remote is the microphone button. The one the one above it is home. The one to the left of it is watch list, which I don't think you'd really be interested in. And then the navigation of the unit is very, very bold. It's, you know, it's a large circle with a dot in the middle. So theoretically getting around, because if we say Netflix, I've just asked it to give me Netflix, and what is it doing it? Probably not. No, it did nothing. Netflix. It did launch Netflix. It was just taking its sweet time. So now that launches Netflix. Does Netflix in itself have accessibility built in?
Not with the menus and that, but once you play a movie, with the audio description turned on, it will start narrating the audio description straight away.
But not the menus. What's the point? I mean, my God. So what about when you're on Apple TV? Does that limit essentially that you can't use a lot of the streaming services? Or does Apple TV kind of override that by giving you descriptions of the Netflix menus?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, it does.
Wow. I mean, that far out, that says a lot about Apple, doesn't it? And how good is Google TV's version?
It's pretty good too, but it can be a little bit slow sometimes.
Yeah, right. Well, I think we can categorically say Hubble's not for you.
No,
but
thank you.
I'll put it on the list of things. Les Wigan, the chief technical officer at Foxtel, reached out to me and said, let's catch up and, you know, talk about feedback and things. And I've written a lot, but I'm happy to share that with them. I think if I can remember, I think accessibility is a great one because it, you know, obviously it's a portion of the community, but if you win the vision impaired community over, like it's a huge win, right? Like, because I assume like any style of community, whether it's a, you know, outgoing, you know, cycling community or a vision impairment community, once, you know, word spreads, about a thing, about something that's great and good for you. I'll give you an example, celiac community. My kids, two of my kids are celiac, and, you know, the gluten-free community, you hear when something's new or when something's out, and, you know, what you want is positive feedback within that. So that would be the case, I assume, with you. You would tell your friends who might have a similar impairment that, you know, if you stumble across something good, you would share it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So I assume you use an iPhone, Justin?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. No, you can't beat it. And can I ask, have you been visually impaired since birth?
No, I slowly lost my sight over years. Wow. Yeah, had central vision, could read books and all that stuff, but yeah, like in the last 5 years, I've pretty much gone completely blind.
Wow! And do you feel just broadly satisfied with the accessibility of technology, or do you think there is a long, long way to go?
Well, Apple's made things jump ahead by leaps and bounds.
Wow! Yeah,
and Microsoft's trying to catch up a bit with them. Even Google with TalkBack has been good as well.
I was just going to, you know what I was going to say? I would love you to try is things like the Meta Ray-Bans because.
Yeah, I actually do want them.
I'm thinking about what just so today there's an AI in them, right? So I can say, hey, Meta, and, you know, what's the population of Switzerland or whatever? But in America, but it hasn't been released here. I don't know if you've heard about this, but. And I apologize profusely for nearly always saying I don't know if you've seen because it feels really inappropriate. But
that's all right.
But I'm sure it's not the first time you've heard that. But people, the new iteration or the new update takes these to where they're meant to be going, which is, hey, Meta, what can you see? Now, you know, I can see a big red building or I can see a car in front of you or I can see a person in a hoodie. Or like imagine when that gets to facial recognition or, I mean – It's kind of remarkable what we're on the cusp of here, really, when you think about AI and what we're able to wear, let alone take with us. Which reminds me also, have you used those iOS features that apparently, you know, can show you where doorways are or, you know, read signs on doors and things like that? Have you used all that?
I've got a regular phone, not the Pro one. Those features are only on the Pro versions of the iPhone.
Wow. They're only on the Pro version because of the LiDAR and everything, probably,
Yeah, that's right.
Have you got what model iPhone have you got?
13. So I'm hoping to upgrade to either the 15 or the 16 Pro.
Well, here's what we're going to do. Right. I'll email you, so I've got your address. I'm going to order you an iPhone 15 Pro and a set of the Ray-Ban glasses because I want your review. Okay, I want your review.
Yep.
Okay. And I would just love to take that in. I'd love to know, you know, I'd love to know the Apple stuff and a bit more about how it works. Yeah. And I don't know how well we can publish that, but if you can dictate some words, I'd love to have them and publish them. I'd love the Ray-Ban thing because I'd love to know as they improve over the short course of time. I'm assuming that AI stuff's going to come real soon to Australia. Man, that could be – I don't want to call it a game changer because it's a big call, but like it's remarkable to think you could say, what can you see? And, I mean, have you seen those Allcam they're like an attachment for glasses? Yes. And, you know, you can just say, what am I looking at? And it says JB Hi-Fi because it can read it on a shopfront and stuff. I mean, those are $7,000 add-ons to glasses. And if we can do anywhere near that with a set of $450 glasses – it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Well, if you don't, I mean, I don't want to be pushy, but I'd love to buy you those things because I think that's keen, obviously keen on technology and you know, experiencing this something that we're not experiencing the bulk of us, then I'd love to do that for you, mate.
Yeah, I'd love to do that.
All right, mate. I will get your address.
Thank you.
I will order them this afternoon if possible, and we'll get them to you as quick as we can.
Thank you very much for that.
All right, Justin, I'll be in touch on the email, my man. No dramas at all. I'll be in touch and we'll talk regularly, okay?
Okay, thanks, Trev.
Good on you, mate. Thank you. It kind of goes, to be honest, I got a bit of feedback last week about what should I give away and all that kind of stuff, and some of the suggestions were amazing. It was like, take me to WWDC. I think that was Josh Withers. Take us to an Apple event. That's money can't buy. That's legit money can't buy, but it's also legit. That would never happen. And some of the suggestions were like they were just products I can get from those companies. So, I mean, without going into great detail, I've decided to invest a little bit more into the EFTM app. So it's going to take time. I'm not even sure we'll get it done this financial year, but we're going to build out the platform a little bit in there so that the competitions element is entirely built into the app. So there'll be no entering competitions on the website. It'll all be on the app, obviously, because I want you to be in the app. The Ask Trev stuff will be in the app, so it'll be easy to get to. It'll also help me log it and keep track of it. But, you know, I thought of it once we relaunch that, and as I said, that could take 3 or 4 months, but I've got no doubt I can line up a whole bunch of prizes. So we've got daily, weekly, whatever. There'll be heaps of things to give away. But – and maybe I'll go back and I'll do a mobile survey sooner rather than later too. But the kind of prizes I wanted to come up with were like, what can I maybe this didn't come through. I wanted to buy things. I didn't want to have to make it a sponsored thing or, you know, obligation to a company and all that kind of jazz. And so for me, like, that's the idea there with Justin is I'll buy him those things and we'll all get some unbelievable feedback because it's something you and I can't experience. I can think of a couple other people, Tiffy, Vaughn. There's other people who've been in touch with me who are visually impaired, but you know, it's certainly not the majority of my audience, right? But I'm probably most fascinated about the Ray-Bans and just how big a deal that might be for someone like Justin or a complete bust. But anyway, we'll get to that in time, and I'll get in touch with Justin and sort all that out in the days ahead.
This is the EFTM podcast.
EFTM. All right, let's keep going. Trevor Long taking your calls. Regan's on the line. G'day, Regan.
Good day.
How can I do, what can I do for you, mate?
So I'm looking to buy the garage door opener.
Oh, yeah.
So there is two models that I've been seeing from Meros.
Meros, yeah.
Which is MSG 100HK and yep. MSG 200HK.
Yep.
I feel like I need the home kit because I'm in the Apple ecosystem at home.
100%, mate. If you've got an iPhones or, you know, just an iPhone alone for CarPlay, I would not get anything that's not HomeKit compatible. For that reason. So, yeah, that's a win. The difference between the 100 and the 200, from what I can see, is essentially the Wi-Fi connection. So it's essentially outputting a better signal to the controller and whatnot. But it's interesting because it would really only be an issue if you feel like the Wi-Fi in your garage is poor. So for me, for example, I've got my main modem and router sit in the garage in my little office. So I've got no issues. Same, so yeah. I would get the 100. But if my Wi-Fi and router and stuff were, you know, on the other side of the house, I would probably go for the 200 because it looks like it has a more stable Wi-Fi connection available to it.
I see. Yeah, yeah. I mean, my main modems is in the garage, and I've been using mesh as well, so there's no issues with the Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
throughout the house.
Unlikely to be an issue for. And look, to be honest, we're talking about a $10 price difference. Just get the 200. You know, like, I don't think there's a downward step with the 200, in terms of its features or anything. So. Yeah, I think there's really no doubt that the 200 is the way to go.
I see. So, yeah, because I'm on the same page with you. Like, there is only like $10 different at the moment between the two. So it looks like it's pretty much doing the same thing. But usually, you know, the 200 indicating like it's bigger numbers doesn't mean that it's like a newer version that I need to get instead of the old one. But by the sounds of it, it's just pretty much
I feel like the 200 is newer than the 100. The 100 has been around a lot longer. And I feel like the 200 was created because they got feedback that they had Wi-Fi issues with the original one. But honestly, dude, get the 200. It's $10 a difference and you're kind of future-proofing yourself.
Okay.
Happy days, okay. Regan. Good luck. Enjoy the install.
All right. Thank you.
Cheers,
thanks
buddy.
For the call.
Thanks for getting in touch. Easy one there. And the Meros stuff, I mean, I have, you know, some issues with some of the switches. I've got like 15 switches here in the office. And I do notice I've had to replace a couple of them. But, yeah, I mean, in terms of the garage door openers, I haven't seen a better one out there yet. Trevor Long taking your tech calls. John's on the line. G'day, John.
G'day.
How you doing, mate?
I'm well.
Now, you got in touch about Hubble. Have you bought one?
Yeah, I bought one about a week or so ago, just when it came out.
Yep. And what are your thoughts early on?
Look, I think its main aspirations are based upon what they're public relations people are talking about, including their managing director, are to create a unified environment. By that I mean all applications are openable inside the Hubble.
Yep.
Secondly, that in looking at content on the applications, which are free-to-air applications as well as streaming applications. You can pick up the content and put it into a universal watch list. And
well, I mean, the button, the remote's got a little plus button on it, doesn't it? That's built just for the watch list. That's, I guess, their key feature, right?
Yeah, but and to me, you know, that is the most important thing. All about Hubble, you know, in a world where there is a battle to be able to simplify the viewing environment, you know, for subscribers. What Hubble has succeeded in doing is getting that to work, except for Netflix. And Netflix is I'm talking about the universal watch list here, and Netflix is the most one of the two most, in my opinion, two most sought after apps or so, used apps.
So are you saying you can't add a Netflix program to your watch list?
That's right.
Well, hang on.
That's
I'm
right.
just looking you at know, mine now. Now, I just for the record, I just scrolled through because I just had a previous call talking about Hubble, so it was open near me. The one I'll give them this because I've been pretty critical of them, but I'll give them this. They've created a, what do they call them, a carousel, a little list of programs called F1 Melbourne Race Week, and there are, mate, oh, there's shows here I've never heard of, but they're, like, there's McLaren on Binge, which is the story of Bruce McLaren. There's a Lewis Hamilton documentary on 7+. There's Braun on Disney. Like, it's actually, I didn't even know there was a documentary about Fernando Alonso on Prime, so I'll give them that. That's pretty cool. But when I scroll down and it says watch on Netflix, and I scroll across to something I've never seen before. Let's find something like Society of the Snow. And I hit the plus button. It says added to your watch list.
Yeah, but you go in there and into the watch list and see if it's there.
Okay.
Not at all sure that
it does. What was it called? Most recent, Society of the Snow.
It's saying it's in there.
Yep. Now I'm just looking, because I just added a bunch of stuff just to test it because I hadn't really used it. Yeah, so Society of the Snow, which I just added, comes up under movies as well, so it must be a movie. Let me go back to that Netflix carousel and I'll add Drive to Survive, which is not a movie. American Conspiracy, that's not a movie. I don't know what any of these things are. Rebel Moon Part 1, don't know what that is, but anyway. So all of those added to my watch list, and then we scroll up to watch list. And, yeah, they're all there. Movie, sport, Drive to Survive comes under sport. Mate, I think they're there. I think it's working.
Well, if you look at the fine print in the Hubble documentation, they will say that you can't watch list in Hubble Netflix content because of licensing agreements. And I've actually checked that with their support. They've confirmed that to be the case. So I don't quite know what's happening there, but I've actually had the experience of trying to watch list Netflix content within the Hubble environment, and it hasn't worked. But it has worked
For all the other stuff.
Subscribers. Yeah.
Well, I've now got two things I'm going to follow up Hubble on. I had an earlier caller about accessibility for the visually impaired. And now I'm curious as to whether I've got, for example, like a test version of the software or something. I'm running what's called System Info Entertainment OS 1.2. Build version.
Yeah, I wonder whether or not if you give it a bit of time and you go back in and have a look at the watch list and find that it's still there. I wonder whether or not, you know, I think, I don't think you'll find it there. In my opinion, I could be wrong, but I think it will disappear.
All right, well, I'll have another look in a couple of days, but I just have to be, open about this. It's working right now. I can't really dispute
To summarize it, that is my only problem I've got with it.
Do you live alone, or, John?
Sorry?
Do you live alone, or have you got a partner?
No.
I was just going to say, because the one thing I want someone to test, which I haven't done, is the multiple watch lists. So you can, in the watch list function, you can create, like, multiple profiles, right? So you know, it might be Trevor, Amanda, Jackson, you know, our house, you know. Now, the idea, as it was explained to me, was that if I'm watch listing a bunch of shows and then my wife watch lists a bunch of shows, because you can use profiles, it will theoretically at times come up with a carousel that says watch with Amanda, like Trevor and Amanda, so that it's kind of saying, hey, guys, you like these shows. You both like these shows. You should watch them together. I don't mind that concept. I just don't think people are going to log in and out of Hubble with different profiles. I think that's the challenge, is I think people aren't bothering to do that. So, yeah.
Yeah, in my personal opinion, I think that's a secondary function in terms of significance.
For sure.
My general view is that for some time now, you know, with the exponential increase in subscriber services, both free to air and paid, that there's a plethora of stuff and you lose your place. You know, that most of us who've got a number of those services have to sort of go and open up each of the apps, and I've got about 8 of them, just looking through, identifying content, and then having to watch list it within the app itself. You lose your place. There's no real way of being able to keep a record of it, except probably using Just Watch.
Yeah, exactly.
And Just Watch is a bit clunky itself. And then, so you know what? Then there have been some answers to it, such as Plex, which I've got. Mm. But Plex sort of allows you to get in there, but it doesn't scrape, aggregate all the data properly, so you don't know precisely and accurately what's there all the time. It does a reasonably good job, but because they can't get the metadata directly from the app suppliers, they aren't sort of getting up to the minute data.
Yeah.
So therefore, problem one is you don't know exactly whether or not you're up to date with to the minute content.
Yep.
And then what Plex allows you to do is to put it into a watch list, but a universal watch list containing content from all apps, but it doesn't allow you to play for them. Now, in my opinion, Hubble has done is they've recognised that problem.
Mm.
And they've, by and large, they have fixed it.
Yeah.
And I reckon.
But you're saying if it's going to be fixed, it's got to be done properly. It's got to genuinely work for everything. Which also goes to my point. My biggest criticism. So your criticism is watch list, and we'll play that out over the next week and see if it actually is a feature or not. My criticism is, well, A, they don't have Stan and Paramount and all the services yet. So that's a bit of to come. But also, if you're going to do it, like this whole single sign on and log in and add to your account, I want it to be easy. It should be like, I want to sign up for Stan, click a button and it's just done. I don't want to have to create an account and a password and all that. Dude, you've got my details. Yeah. Just create an account. Like, it should be absolutely frictionless.
Yeah, well, look, I honestly believe that, you know, Hubble has done quite a good job in that, and they will get Stan, and I'm patient enough to wait for that. But where, and maybe it seems trivial, where I have the view that the fundamental and most important and significant thing required is a universal watch list, which I think they have done, they are missing the ability, you know, to benchmark or not benchmark, to bookmark and in a watch list, a universal watch list, one of the biggest apps of all.
The failure of the watch list in general terms, I would say, is that you can only watch list things that appear on the Hubble home screen. So, you know, Hubble's only surfacing things that, you know, are editorially significant at that time. Whereas if you think about the Netflix catalog, which, as you say, is the broadest and most popular catalog in Australia, if you open up the Netflix app, it is unbelievable how much stuff is there. And I can't add from the Netflix app, I can't add stuff to my Hubble watch list. So is that what you're talking about generally, or are you talking about just in the home screen?
I'm talking about both. Right. In the Hubble environment, you can't, although we just had that conversation where you said you could, but it's not my experience. But theoretically, you can't, in the Hubble environment, identify Netflix content and bookmark it.
Yeah.
So And they're saying to be able to bookmark, you've actually got to go into the Netflix app itself to be able to use their watch list.
Understood, yeah.
But the second thing is, as you said, you can't go in to the Netflix environment and ask it, you know, to add to a universal watch list in Hubble.
Outside of the, so which would be ideal because you could dig. It'd be like walking through Blockbuster and then going next door to Civic Video and then going next door to Video Easy and coming up with a list of all the titles you want to have in one place. But what Hubble requires is that they tell you, 15 or 20 titles that are in each of those stores and you choose from those, as opposed to having the full depth. So, look, it's got a way to go. Here's my challenges. I'll look at mine over the next week to see whether they stay there. I think if you keep an eye on yours and check for software updates, let's see whether you get those Netflix watch list potentials from the Hubble home screen. John, good to chat to you, mate, and I'm glad you're generally enjoying the Hubble and hopefully it improves with time.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, mate. Thanks for the chat. I'm not sure John could be convinced. Okay. Look, I'll be honest with you. John's email from the website EFTM.com said, in my opinion, you let Patrick Delaney off a bit in your Hubble review. Now, I've got to tell you, my Hubble review was more critical than any other Hubble review I can find on the internet. So I don't think I let him off at all. But, you know, this was I've not tested the watch list. I just haven't. It's just not something I do. It's not a feature that happens in my daily life. So I haven't. So I was fascinated by this, but I've just proven that what he said wasn't right. But weirdly, he's still super confident about the platform. So let's see how it pans out over the little time ahead.
EFTM. This is the EFTM podcast. EFTM podcast.
Trevor Long taking your calls. Lenny's on the line. He had some advice for me, which I think is relevant for everyone. Lenny, how are you, buddy?
Good, thank you, Trevor. How are you?
Mate, really good. You're a Philips Hue man, are you?
Yeah, I've got quite a few, Trevor, in my house. And
hang on, let's establish, is your wife, are you married?
Yeah, married with kids.
Is your wife on board with the Philips Hue, or does she not give a rat's?
She's on board. She's on board.
Can I give her my wife's number? Anyway, so I was rabbiting on about the bathroom. What have you done in terms of, you know, things like that, the sensors?
Yes, I've got Philips Hue in most of the bedrooms and in a wardrobe and in a pantry and in the ensuite.
Yep.
With the pantry one, as soon as the door opens and it detects motion, it turns the light on, and then when the door's closed, it turns the light off.
Hang on, is that like a door sensor or a motion sensor?
Yeah, it's a motion sensor, but you can get a contact sensor. But okay. So I didn't find a contact at the time. I didn't find a contact sensor. I found a motion sensor.
But hang on, so if the door closes, there's no motion. Is it a set time? So you say after X number of minutes?
With mine, I go into a thing called in the Philips Hue app. There's a Philips Hue lab.
Yeah.
A lab section in the automation in the Philips Hue section.
Mm.
And I filtered through some of them until I found one that suited it. You download that.
Is this the three times a charm thing?
That's the one, yeah, three times a charm. And that works well in the bathroom because in the bathroom, like between 5 and say 7 o'clock, it comes on at full strength, at, 100%.
Yep.
And then after 8:30, I dim it down to a certain amount of time, and then after say 11 o'clock, I call it night light. It just comes on about 10%.
So all I need is a Philips Hue sensor to go with the lights,
yes.
and then the three times a charm lab add on.
Yes, yes, right. And it'll say, I haven't got that on me right now, but it'll say in that download lab thing, it'll say how long it'll stay on for, and you can move that around to suit. Yeah,
perfect.
You can adjust it to suit your own needs.
You're a good man, Lenny. Get back to work.
All right, thank you very much.
Good on you, mate. Thanks for the info. Good on you, mate. Cheers. I rang Lenny because you all know. Well, you send me an email, I ring you. Lenny's like, nah, I can't talk on my work. I said, mate, someone in the office has taken Smoko. Go, just tell them you're taking Smoko. Like, there's always those people in the office that nick off for 20 minutes at a time having a smoke. We can all be that person once a week. Anyway, I did get a lot of feedback about the bathroom, Philips Hue, so thank you for that. And I just need to convince the wife to separate the fan and light switch in the bathroom. so that I can turn the light on kind of permanently and try and convince her that it'll turn off when it's not needed. So we've got a bit of work to do there. We'll get there. You get in touch, EFTM.com.
EFTM. This is the EFTM Podcast. EFTM Podcast.
Let's get going with calls. Martin's on the line. Trevor Long taking your calls. G'day, Martin.
Hi, Trevor. How are you?
Really good, mate. What can I do for you?
That's good. Well, I contacted you because I've got a bit of a problem with Kogan and Samsung about a phone that we bought. We bought an A54.
Yep. Just recently? Like it's that's pretty new, yeah?
Yeah. Well, it's less than a year. Well, the phone hasn't been out that long, exactly.
Yep.
I bought it as a phone for my wife to replace an old Huawei.
Yep.
She needed a new phone because the old one's battery was going. Okay. So we bought it and I looked online, thought, okay, I saw a price from Kogan and I bought it through Kogan.
Yep.
Now, I thought I was buying it from Kogan. I didn't see anywhere, so as far as I was concerned, I was buying it direct from Kogan.
Yep, yep.
I didn't think I was getting it from overseas, and that's the basis of the problem. However, let's get into the story. So I bought the phone from Kogan, paid them the money, and the money, as it shows on PayPal, went to directly to Kogan, didn't go to anybody else.
Sure.
I got a contact from them about a week after we paid, saying there was a delay in the delivery and it was coming from Hong Kong. That was the first I knew that it was coming from Hong Kong.
Right.
Okay, about 3 or 4 weeks later, it arrived. Phone's been operating perfectly, no problems whatsoever. So I came home last Saturday week on Saturday from work because I work on Saturdays. Came back and my wife said to me, the phone's been really hot. It's been overheated and it won't work. So I picked up the phone, had a look at it, and it was showing messages that it was overheating. Mm. But she also said, have a look at the back. And the back had the back of the phone had bubbled or lifted.
In an A54, this is like a week's old phone.
Exactly.
Mate, I've got in front of me a Samsung Galaxy. I think it might be an S6. Samsung Galaxy S6. So this is about a 14-year-old phone or something like that, right? And I went looking for it the other day because I was doing a segment on old 4G phones. Anyway, the back's off it because the battery has bulged up and, you know, is ready to expire. And
well, the back's not off it.
But that happens, right? That's what you're witnessing. You're witnessing the back bulging up, and if you left it long enough, it'd expand, the back would come off. And just so you know, this happens to phones. Like I've got 100 phones downstairs, and it's probably happened to 20 of them because they haven't been charged and discharged and recharged and discharged for years and years and years and years and years. And so it's my fault. I'm trying to keep these phones for historic purposes. I should have kept charging them. But a 2-week-old phone – should absolutely bulging.
It's not 2 weeks. It's 7 or 8 months.
Hang on. So it's not an A54. Yeah, you're right. 54 is last year, isn't it?
A54. Yeah, that's right. I bought it in July.
35 is this year.
In August.
So 55 is this year. Right, gotcha. But 54. It's a year old, mate. It doesn't matter. It's a year old. So what does Kogan say when you ring them? Or email them?
Well, I email them.
Yep.
They pass it on to Hong Kong. I have not been able to contact Kogan themselves at all. I've had a response from Hong Kong, and twice they've responded to me and said, send us pictures, which I've done, and they just sent it overnight again saying, send us the pictures.
Yeah.
So I'm getting no response whatsoever out of them. I then thought, this is not very long. This is a new phone. It's an A54. I thought I was buying it from Australia. To be quite honest, I then contacted Fair Trading, and Fair Trading said, well, the first thing is, because I told them it was potentially this overseas warranty situation, and they said, well, it comes down to where you paid the money. And PayPal shows me on their receipt or on the report they give me that it went to Kogan. It didn't go to anybody else.
Yep.
So I contacted Fair Trading Go on that. Backpedal. I then contacted Samsung.
Yep.
So I rang Samsung on their
support line, yep.
Chat line, support line, which they answered. And I got a person in the Philippines, and they told me, take the thing to the local, we live in Wollongong.
Yep.
Said, take the thing down to our local pickup area, which is Harvey Norman, and they'll send it to us and we'll look at it for you.
Yep.
So I went down there and they said, take proof of purchase. So proof of purchase I took was the receipt I got from Kogan, which shows that it was Hong Kong. I took it down there and the guy said, look, it's no sense giving it to me because we'll send it to them and they won't look at it. They'll send it straight back. I said, but hang on, I bought this from Kogan Australia. They're the supposedly biggest online provider in Australia. Yep, they're an Australian company, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, he said, well, that's the situation. So I thought, well, it's no sense if that's what's going to happen, leaving it there and coming back to pick it up again. So I came home, rang Samsung call line again and said, look, I want to speak to somebody in Australia of authority. So they said, well, we can't do that, but what we can do is we can send them an email request to call you. The following day, a lady from Samsung did ring me. I explained the whole situation to us. She said, well, it's nothing we can do. It was bought overseas. They make different models for different countries. And I said, but hang on, it's the battery that's gone in this thing. It's a brick. It won't even switch on. No, they weren't interested at all. Three quarters of the way through the conversation we were obviously getting nowhere because she was just basically saying, you're not going to get anywhere with this with us.
Wow.
The phone disconnected. Now, I didn't disconnect it because I was talking through my headphones, so I couldn't have disconnected the phone. I wasn't touching the phone. I tried ringing back on the number, and there was no answer. Presumably, they don't take calls on the number. I couldn't complain about that. So obviously, I couldn't complain about anything at all. I then went back to Fair Trading and said, you know, what can I do? And after them explaining everything to me, first off, they asked me to send a letter to Kogan. So the only contact I had was back through the Kogan email responding on the online there. I responded it with this letter as basically drafted by Fair Trading with my details, okay? No response came to that whatsoever. I gave them a deadline of Friday. And it got nowhere. So now I've raised the issue with Fair Trading. I've put in a complaint in writing, and they said, we'll look after it. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. And that's where it is at the moment. So basically, I've got Kogan have got my phone number, my email. They have not personally responded to me at all. They haven't rung me. I've told them I'm quite happy to verbally discuss this with you. It's a brick. It's in the warranty period. You guys ought to at least make me feel a bit better.
I'll stop you there. It's a shit fight. All right, let's be real about it. It's an absolute outrage. But I'll tell you right now, I think there's a lot of people at fault here. Now, firstly, Kogan should have a better way of managing the support, but I'll explain that in a second. Secondly, Samsung, you know, it shouldn't matter where you buy the phone. It's a Samsung phone, especially when it's a battery. If it was a network connectivity issue, I would agree the international thing. But if you take an Apple phone anywhere in the world, they'll just fix it. That's just how they work, and I think Samsung should do the same. And Harvey Norman should never have said to you that we won't take it because you shouldn't bother sending it because they'll just send it back. I mean, let that happen. Let's find out whether they were going to send it back because, you know, you don't know that if you hadn't left it there and had it sent off, it wouldn't have come back fixed, right? So there's a few failure That's points true. There that I think are a bit rubbish in the way you've been treated. From a Kogan perspective, let me just say this without, you know, I'm not speaking on their behalf, I don't get paid by them, but Kogan would hate this, right? They don't want this for anyone. They don't want this for any customer. They are a marketplace. And I think that's, so let me tell you how I shop on Kogan. Whenever I go to Kogan.com, I click on the button that says sold by Kogan.com. And like if you look at Samsung Galaxy A54, there's thousands of items. But if you click on sold by Kogan.com, there's four. So like I know that I'm buying directly from them, not from a marketplace. So that's the first thing because basically, you know, Trevor Long can create a shop front that sells through Kogan. And that creates this disconnect between who you're paying and who you're buying it from and all that kind of rubbish. You shouldn't need to know about it. It shouldn't matter. But Kogan does also sell some grey imported products from Hong Kong or wherever they want to source. That doesn't matter. It still is their problem to support. So first and foremost, I'll represent to you, to Kogan, on your behalf, first and foremost. Secondly, I can't speak for Harvey Norman. Good luck to them. I think it's useless customer service you got there, especially if they're a warranted, authorized Samsung collection point. They shouldn't have questioned Samsung Australia. I will then go to Samsung Australia on your behalf for the same reason. Can we just send the phone off and can we just get it fixed? It shouldn't be that difficult. You know, this is not a big deal. So I'm going to send you an email, Martin, so that you've got my direct email address. I've got your main original email. I don't need much other than proof of purchase and maybe the back and forth between you and the original the Hong Kong people so that I can send that to Kogan. And if you've got any back or forth or record numbers or whatever with Samsung, send those to me as well. But I will attack this on two fronts, from Kogan and at Samsung. We'll try and get you that phone repaired, okay?
Appreciate it very much, Trevor. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Stand by for an email from me today.
Great. By the way, I'm a Rooster supporter like your son, and I don't like South supporters. We've got to put up with Stephen, but however.
Yeah. Isn't it? It's a punish putting up with him generally, but isn't it great that he spent, I don't know, a billion frequent flyer points going to Las Vegas and saw them smash there, and then he spent money and time taking his wife to Brisbane to watch them get smashed there. At least the Dolphins have had a win.
Yes, that's exactly right.
All right,
Martin. Friday night will be a tell.
Stand by for my email, mate, and give me those details and we'll represent on your behalf.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much.
My pleasure, mate. My pleasure. No worries at all. It's not easy. Like, it's annoying on all three fronts. Samsung, Kogan, Harvey Norman. Weirdly, I'm more annoyed about Harvey Norman than anything there because I feel like, you know, frustrating Hong Kong back and forth, Samsung back and forth. But then you're told to do something. Told to take it there and send it off. And the bloke there says, don't bother. Well, mate, can you just let me hear from Samsung, don't bother? I don't know. I just feel like it shouldn't have taken that long, but regardless, that's annoying. Anyway, we'll see what we can do for Martin in the days ahead.
EFTM. You're listening to the EFTM podcast. EFTM.
Thank you for listening. As always, Peter's on the line. G'day, Peter.
G'day, Trevor. How are you doing?
Yeah, really good, mate. What can I do for you?
Trevor, we've got about a 15-year-old Panasonic and we're doing a renovation at home, so I thought it was time to upgrade.
I just shivered in my seat because you said the word renovation. We've had builders at our place now for 2 months doing our bathrooms, and my wife's over it. I'm over it. I just want our bathrooms finished. Anyway, what are we are we doing the lounge room? So are we getting a new TV?
You're not even close. We're coming up for 3 years, but don't get me started.
Oh, okay.
I'll raise you and see you one.
Yeah,
done. So the Panasonic's still going, but it's time to upgrade, I think.
How old did you say it was?
14 or 15.
Wow. I mean, that is a solid life from a TV, mate. I actually I genuinely think my Panasonic, we got a little Panasonic, it'd be, I feel like it's 32 inches in the bedroom. And we've been in our current house 10 years. And before that, it replaced a Sanyo on the wall. And I reckon it's 2 years old on that. I reckon it's a 12-year-old TV and it is showing no signs of ill health at all. Shout out to Panasonic, who don't make TVs anymore.
Oh, okay.
What are you looking for? What are you going to put in the lounge room?
Well, we can go up to 75 inches, maybe 85 at a push, but probably stop at the 75 or 77.
Is that whichever. Because of the wall space, the furniture? What's the restriction?
Just where we sit from it. We're about 4 metres from where the TV would be.
Listen, Peter, I sit 3.6 metres from our TV and we've got 100 inch.
Okay. Because you can.
Why wouldn't you? Like, the wall's big enough. Like, why would I buy it? Like, little Harry, 12-year-old, said to me yesterday, he said, do you remember when we had a 65-inch TV? it was classic. Mate, look, honestly, when you talk about a 4K, when you've got 4K, the resolution is really such that you can be closer. You definitely don't want to be 2 metres away from it, but at 4 metres, 85 is an absolute pinch, mate. I genuinely think that you'll regret not going 85, even if you go 75. Right. What's the budget? Have you got a budget in mind? You've got a 3-year renovation going on. This is a fascinating question.
look, I've got to the stage where I'm just forking out money hand over fist. So if I want a good TV, so start off by telling me what's the best.
Look, okay, the best TV at eight. We'll just talk 85 because everything I say at 85 applies at 75. Just discount it by 20% or something, right? In the office here at EFTM, I've got an 85-inch Samsung Neo QLED 8K TV, right? It is the most beautiful thing that I've seen, and they're going to take it away from me soon and hopefully replace it with next year's one because that's how lucky I am here at the office, but not at home. Now, the reason I love this TV is not because purely of the picture quality, but when hung on a wall, and it's not, mine's just sitting on a stand, when hung on a wall, this thing's almost invisible because there's no big black border around it. So the border around the edge of this thing is like less than a millimeter. It is unbelievable. So you need to go into a store and look at a Neo QLED 8K because there are plenty of Neo QLEDs, but just to be clear, they're premium one, and I'll just sit down for a minute here. This is a $10,000 TV, okay? So that's the top of the pops. Right, just so you know where you're at with the Reno, that's a $10,000 TV. But remember, there's new models coming out and the old models will get cheaper. So who knows, right? Let's be real.
Sure.
Now, secondary to that, oh my God, I'm just on the JB Hi-Fi website and I may need to rush off and write an article now because I think JB Hi-Fi has either accidentally or otherwise released the prices of the Samsung 2024 models. So they're all listed here on pre-order. Anyway, leaving that aside, if we just step down a little bit from that, okay, half the price, so $5,000, is going to get you a Sony Bravia. Now, Sony make beautiful TVs. Bravia is a great visual engine, and this one has Google TV built in. So for $5,000, I'm getting a Sony 85-inch TV with all the apps and all the control and everything you're going to want to do, okay? So top of the pops, $10,000. Mid-range, Sony, $5,000. The other one then at that same level is the Frame. Have you ever seen the Frame from Samsung?
No.
This is the TV that you buy. You buy the TV and then you buy for like $120, $200, you buy a wooden or other look frame to go around it so it looks like a picture frame. And when you're not watching TV, it shows artwork. Beautiful.
Okay.
Beautiful artwork because the TV is a big black box on the wall. But if you've got people over and you're not watching TV, just just chatting, playing poker, whatever, the TV is showing beautiful artwork. So it is a beautiful TV worth looking at, okay? And that's going to be around the same price, four and a bit grand. But for value, and I don't think there's a massive compromise here in your day-to-day viewing, if I was in your position – I would need to be doing very well to want to buy that $10,000 TV despite the fact that I drool over it. If I was in your position, I would buy either a Hisense or a TCL 85-inch mini LED. Both of those under $3,000, more like $2,500. Great TVs, mini LEDs, good backlighting technology. It's going to look great watching movies. It's just a good mid-range value, and basically I'd spend any leftovers on a sound system, making sure that I had a really nice sound bar and all those different things.
Okay, I got the Hisense. What was the second one?
TCL.
TCL.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you've basically got there, you've got two TVs at the low range. They're not the cheapest TVs, but they're low range, $2,500 to $3,000, Hisense and TCL. You've got your Frame from Samsung, which I really want you and your wife to see in the stores, at around $4,500, and then the Sony at five, and then you just you have to go to a store that has the Neo QLED 8K. Just find a Harvey Norman or someone that's got one and have a look. It's beautiful.
Okay, now that's a QLED. Just very quickly, QLED or OLED?
Well, that's a great question. So now OLED, just for comparison, so there's no OLEDs at 85. Weirdly. LG's sizes, because of the way that OLED panels are cut, are 77 and I think 83 is the other number. But I'll just show you a 77-inch TV that's OLED and kind of give you the sense of price, right? So a 77-inch OLED from LG is going to cost you $6,500.
Right.
If you got That's the G series from last year. Again, great time to buy a TV, mate, because last year's models are awesome. There's no real – there's some changes and there's some tweaks, but, mate, honestly, are you going to notice the difference? You'd have to be an absolute genius to notice. So good time to buy last year's TV if you want value, but also a great time to buy this year's TV if you just want to go, no, I'm investing for the super long term here. 77-inch OLED is going to cost you around $7,000 to $8,000. Now, an OLED is the most magnificent picture quality you can get, no question. But the difference between 77-inch and 85-inch is something like 20% screen size. So it's not small. It's quite a big difference.
Just significant. So you know.
Yeah, it is. It's really weird thing that 10-inch step up is a big difference in size. Mm. But look, I wouldn't argue with you if you said to me, mate, I'm happy to spend $8,000 on an OLED because it is a beautiful, beautiful TV.
Okay.
But don't do that without seeing the Neo QLED 8K and that beautiful, beautiful border. It's beautiful, mate. It's just unbelievably beautiful.
Yeah. All right.
Good luck. Happy shopping, man.
Hey, listen, thank you very much for taking your time to
call. No, my pleasure.
Trevor, really appreciate that.
It's, my absolute pleasure, mate.
Good to speak to someone who actually knows what they're talking about without trying to sell me a set.
Well, mate, I hope you find something that works for you and your family.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Good on you, Peter. Thanks, mate. Cheers. What about a 15-year-old 50-inch TV? And, yeah, I think my bedroom TV, I'm going to try and work it out how old it is. Maybe I'll look up the model number or something. Let me know what the oldest TV you've got is. What's the oldest you've got? We'll see if we can find someone with the oldest possible TV. All right, I've been at added value in the show for you this week, and I will – oh, my God, I'm running out of time, but I will get to Justin and get him that phone and glasses, and I will talk to Kogan and Samsung about Martin's concerns. See if we can get some resolution for them in the weeks ahead and bring you that information as we do. Thank you for listening. Great to have your company. I appreciate it. Great for you to please support all the companies that support EFTM. If you go to the website, you see them all there. They're advertising regularly, you know, Arlo, Belkin, Trend Micro, LG. I've forgotten. Ecovacs, Motorola. There's a lot of great companies that are supporting what I do here at EFTM by advertising at EFTM, and that's what makes the world go round. So thank you to them, and hopefully you support them as best you can in your tech purchasing. We'll be back again very soon, probably next week, with another episode of the EFTM podcast.
This is the EFTM podcast.
Well, it was. Now it's not.